Dear Sugar is supported by
The universe has good news for the lost, lonely, and heartsick. Sugar is here, the both of us, speaking straight into your ears. I'm Cheryl Strayed.
I'm Steve Almond. This is Dear Sugar Radio.
Oh, dear soul, won't you please share some bittersweet days with me? Every day, oh, in the sugar you send my way.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Steve. It's wedding season, and we have so many interesting and juicy and complicated letters. Mm-hmm. We say they're about weddings, but honestly, once a wedding starts, it's like a ball rolling down a hill.
Right.
It's really the drama is the lead up to the wedding. And we find that so many people have struggles with their fiancés and their relatives and their friends. And we're going to do rapid fire questions today all about weddings.
Yes.
And next week, I'm really excited. We're going to be talking to Lois Smith Brady, who is, of course, the founding columnist of the Vows column in the New York Times. As an outside observer, she's probably witnessed more weddings than anyone else, and certainly lots of wedding drama.
And exactly. That's it. Because you're right. It's not just the wedding itself. It is the drama that's attendant that begins really literally almost at the moment of engagement.
Did you have any wedding drama?
I did have wedding drama. I mean, you know, as we've talked about on the show, I eloped.
Yeah.
With, you know, wonderful patient Aaron.
So you're like non-wedding drama.
Basically, I created the wedding drama by deciding that I wanted to opt out of that for reasons that now I think I can understand, but we're also dumb or failed to take into account important people's feelings. But I was sitting there saying, Aaron's pregnant. We're living across the country from one another. We've got to buy a house. I've got to write a book. And we don't have time to get into all this crazy drama, mm-hmm. all the wedding drama. And of course, in making that decision, I created much more drama. I don't think there's a way out of it.
Yeah.
It was interesting, Cheryl, as I thought about doing these episodes, I started to think in my mind about all the weddings in literature and realizing like, oh, let me just find an example of a happy wedding in literature. And I was like, oh, for literature. You know, I went back to, okay, I mean, Miss Havisham.
Right.
Dickens, right. Okay, at 20 minutes to nine, she is stood up and like lives in that wedding dress. Okay, so that's like a horrible wedding. That did not go well. That didn't even go. And then, okay, well, you know, Edith Wharton, Comedy of Manners. Nope, it's terrible. It's basically four weddings and a funeral before that film was made. You know, you have the beautiful, carefully orchestrated wedding, and there is the groom, Newland, who's not looking at his moneyed, beautiful bride, May. He's like scanning the aisles because his true love isn't the one at the altar. Jane Eyre, the first wedding with Rochester that goes south immediately. They later get married, but only after like huge amounts of disaster and disfigurement. And I'm like, wow, literature is really kind of a graveyard when it comes to weddings.
And there's a reason for that, of course. It's not just your own family and friends coming together. Really, when else do they come together like that? It's your partner's family and their friends coming together.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are all these expectations, as you say, that are about, you know, what your mother wants and what your father wants and what your sister wants and your brother. There's also just societal norms. And when a bride or groom decides to disrupt them, that can cause discomfort and sometimes outright conflict.
Yep.
When I was getting married, Brian's mother is, you know, a wonderfully supportive person. But immediately what became apparent was her ideas of what our wedding would be like
right.
were very different than ours. So, for example, Brian and I were living together. And so she said, well, you're not going to wear a white dress. And she has this way of, she puts a tiny question mark at the end of it, but it's really a command.
Right.
And I said, oh, actually, I am.
Well, with a scarlet letter.
Right. Well, and I had been married before and stuff. It's really a cultural and societal norm. It was like, if this is your second wedding, you wear a kind of, you know, modest dress that isn't white. And I get where she gets that. Okay.
Right.
And then when it came to registering,
right.
you know, she wanted us to register and we were like, oh, we don't want to register. And she's like, you have to register. So then we registered. And then she said, well, all of my friends, they want to know, like, what are your bathroom color is going to be, which was so interesting. It was like her idea is that once I got married, I would be transformed into this woman, this wife that would suddenly, you know, have like
bathroom
designated
colors.
Bathroom colors that I would then register for. And I have nothing against people who do that. So please don't, you know, send me angry emails. If you want your bathroom colors to be blue and yellow, that's beautiful. But it just wasn't who I was at that moment in my life. And I said to her, oh, I don't have bathroom colors. And she said, well, you have to have bathroom colors.
Right.
And I thought it was really interesting, you know, what was happening in these conflicts, which, you know, we resolved. We just sort of both let it go. But I think that so many of these letters we're going to contemplate today are about those collisions, like different expectations and ideas about what this occasion means,
what
this passage means.
That's right. That's exactly right. Well, let's get started. We're going rapid fire, Styly.
All right. Dear Sugars, I'm getting married in a couple of months, and my fiancé and I couldn't be more excited. Soon after we were engaged, my fiancé's father asked for a relatively large amount of invitations to give out to what he calls his side. My fiancé, on his own, said no. We're trying to keep the numbers down. My future father-in-law's response was, "Then I'm not coming." I told my fiancé that if that's what it takes to get him to our wedding, he can have however many invites he wants. But the damage had already been done. Everyone thought this would blow over, but it's been 6 months, and my fiancé and his father are no longer speaking at all. I can't help but think my fiancé and his dad will both regret this in 20 years. Many relatives from all sides have reached out to my fiancé's father to try to better understand his perspective, but so far, no one has succeeded in making peace. It's been thrown around that my father-in-law may not approve of our marriage, or maybe just me. But no matter his motives, I can't imagine him not being at our wedding. Is it time for me to say something? With love, sad daughter-in-law.
Sad daughter-in-law, I hope it doesn't come to this, but you might need to imagine your father-in-law not being at your wedding. And I say that not like with any glee. This is a bummer. And the larger thing that Cheryl was describing in her story, which is so familiar to so many people, is, look, part of what the wedding is a big event that allows everybody else to say sort of what they think this couple should do with their bathroom, with their vows, with their venue, with how big the guest list is and who's on it. And that's okay. That's their job to push their agenda. But this conflict between your beloved and his father has been brewing for a lot longer than when these wedding invites went out. Whatever they're enacting right now is something that they've needed to work out for a while, a power struggle between the two of them. Should you and your husband discuss this? Should you tell your husband, I'm feeling really bad about this. Is there any way to rescue this? Why do you feel so strongly about it? What do you think is going on here? What's being played out? Sure, have that conversation with your husband. You're very gracious in how you handle this, but you say it's been thrown around that my father-in-law may not approve of our marriage or maybe just me. And like, I can't believe how poised you are and not taking umbrage. But if that is a concern for you, then that also should be part of the conversation. But he's got to be the one who works it out with his father. And if they can't work it out, I think he's within his rights, and you're within your rights to say, this is very sad, but you are not the boss of us. Acceding to his belief that he is the center of this thing or that he should hold a certain amount of power and sway in this is failing to set a boundary that you actually need to set, you know, right now.
Yeah, I don't disagree, Steve, with anything you said. But I will say that I would suggest to you, sad daughter-in-law, a slightly gentler stance. I think that there's no question that your father-in-law is in the wrong and it's about control and he's being a bully. But I also think that what you want is your father-in-law at your wedding, okay? And so I say that there might be a middle path to get this, to get what you want. And that is not, you know, absolutely saying, okay, you know, father-in-law, whatever you want us to do, we'll do to make you happy because our wedding's all about you. I'm not suggesting you say that. But, you know, what if you or your fiance, or I think ideally the two of you together, reached out to your father-in-law, whether that be person to person, or if you feel like it would be easier via a letter or an email, that you say, listen, it breaks our heart that we have this conflict that we haven't been able to solve. You know, without going back and revisiting that conflict, you know, some things I think at moments like this, you just have to let it go. And it's really important to us that you're at our wedding. because we love you and we value you. And, you know, we've decided to keep our wedding small, but we would love to invite you, and we can invite like 4 or 5 other family members. And we would love to talk to you about like who you think that can be. And we sure wish that we could invite everyone you want us to invite, but that's just not what our wedding is going to look like. You know, what you're doing is you're not letting him be the boss of you. You're asserting what you want, his presence at your wedding. And you're also giving him a way out. You know, it sounds to me like he's a very prideful person. He sounds to me like somebody who maybe his way of saving face is to follow through on this threat not to come to the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, you know, when you are having a conflict with somebody like that, you do need to allow them a face-saving exit.
Right.
Okay. So again, I do not excuse his bad behavior. I am not defending him. I am saying I want you to get what you want because I think you're right. 20 years down the road, it's probably going to hurt that this man was such a belligerent, you know,
right.
jerk about
right.
this that he didn't show up at your wedding. So try one more time with gentleness and grace and letting that conflict of the past be in the past.
Okay. But I told my fiancé that if that's what it takes to get him to our wedding, he can have however many invites he wants, but the damage had already been done. I think, side daughter-in-law, you've already tried to accommodate this guy, and he's now in a pride drama. And acceding to his pride drama and indulging him and having him show up with his people, because he hasn't just removed himself from this, he's removed his whole side of the family. He's enacting some bigger, larger pride drama. And you know what? It's not about that. It's about you guys coming together. And I agree with you, Cheryl. It would be heartbreaking if he can't be there. But I'm very leery about a father-in-law who makes it about him. And I say that, Cheryl, because this is the family she's marrying into.
Yeah, no, I'm leery too. I keep returning to what is it that you want, and what you said you wanted is his presence at your wedding.
Right. Okay, let's, boy, I knew these were going to be complicated. Here we go. Here's the next one. Dear Sugars, ever since I came out to my mom 11 years ago, our relationship has been rocky at best. Following my coming out, she was verbally abusive to the point that I was afraid of being alone in the same room with her. I was afraid that she would slap or punch me. She would often become angry for no reason that I was aware of, other than hating me for being gay. And often it was so unpredictable and turbulent that I still have nightmares. She would explode without warning. She tried to control my every move. Sugars, I have tried so hard to move on from those awful experiences. I'm writing to you now because I've been feeling scared lately. I've been dating my wonderful girlfriend for about a year, and we recently decided to get married. I've been thinking about our wedding, and I'm so torn about inviting my family. I want our wedding to be absolutely wonderful and full of laughter and love. If I invite my mom, I know she may cause a scene, she might blow a fuse, and at the very least, she will make me feel very uncomfortable because I know she doesn't approve despite how far we've come since those terrible years. If I don't invite her, she may never forgive me, but if I do, she will make the whole situation terrible, not only for me, but for my partner, her family, and our friends. I have to add that when my sister got married a few years ago to a guy my parents didn't approve of, they were unbelievably disrespectful and rude. I don't want to live through this kind of experience again, especially at my own wedding, which is supposed to be one of the most beautiful, memorable experiences of my life. So, I feel stuck, dear Sugars. I want to do the right thing, whatever that might be. I have never been the person who plays nice, who acts the way she's expected to act, just to please someone. On the other hand, I struggle to stand up for myself when my parents are concerned. What do you think I should do? Signed, Out of Ideas.
It's really clear to me,
yeah.
Out of Ideas, what you should do. You should not invite your mother to your wedding. And I have absolutely no doubts about that. You have told us that this is a woman who is abusive to you verbally, physically. She has harmed you. She's proven herself to be somebody who's willing to be disrespectful at weddings, at your very own sister's wedding. I think that you absolutely have a right to have your wedding day be full of joy and laughter and love, as you say. And the only way you're going to get that is by not inviting your mother. So don't invite her. It really is a question that on my end of it seems quite simple. And I know it feels complicated to you because you are such a compassionate person. You say, if I don't invite my mother, she may never forgive me. And I think that, you know, this is a very small thing in the face of the abuse that you've endured, the things that you've forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
I think you really have done obviously so much work, you know, in facing this mother who doesn't approve of who you are at essence. And the gift you can give yourself is to surround yourself with people who love you and support you and your fiancé at this time as you get married.
Yeah, I think that out of ideas, one of the things that you have to realize is you having done the work of finding somebody who you love and cherish, who love and cherishes you, and creating a family with them, sometimes that's the best thing you can do. That doesn't mean that your mom cannot play a role in your life. It means that you have another family that you have chosen that's healthier and better for you. If you want or need a compromise position, and if there's some event that you want to have, a party or a commemoration that involves her, maybe you could have such a thing and you could tell her, here's the decision I've made. And frankly, though this may be a really tough thing to do, and here's why. And I know that sounds like kind of tough medicine, like why pick a fight with a bully? But I do think that weddings are partly about a young couple staking out their territory. I think that's why I took a harder line with sad daughter-in-law, because I feel this sense of you have to set boundaries. And the boundaries are, this is my family that I'm creating. I'm choosing this person. We're going to move forward together. And I am going to leave behind some of the intimidation, the guilt tripping, the cruel behavior that maybe was tolerated in my family of origin because I didn't have a choice. You do now really have a choice. And I totally understand your struggle to stand up for yourself where your parents are concerned, but this wedding can be beautiful and all the things that you want, but it will only happen that way if you do stand up to them, and in particular to your mother, by saying, you're not entitled to be at this gathering. That is a privilege. That's not a right. Just because she had a daughter doesn't mean she gets to be at that daughter's wedding.
Yeah. Good luck. And we hope you have a wedding of love and laughter.
God, that would be awesome.
Write to us and tell us how that turned out. So this next letter is kind of the inverse situation. Dear Sugars, I'm in a bit of a pickle. My older brother is getting married on the same day as two of my dear friends' graduation. Sounds like a no-brainer, right? Marriage of a brother trumps friend's graduation? Well, here's the thing. My brother abused me as a child. He's 4 years older than me, and when he hit puberty, he went through a rough period during which he was bullied. He took most of his frustrations out on me. I told my parents a few times what he was doing, and they would tell him to stop and tell me that he was just being a boy. I know now that that's not true or right, but at the time I accepted it. It didn't really stop until he went to college. Now, as adults, he's 30, I'm 26, he and I have no relationship to speak of. We never talk. I live in Illinois, and he's in Pennsylvania. I visited home twice in the past 2 years and saw him for a total of an hour both times. He's never said he was sorry for his behavior. I feel no obligation to him whatsoever. He's not part of my life anymore. I harbor no ill will. I don't hate him. I don't feel anything towards him at all. The friends who are graduating, on the other hand, are part of the family that I've made for myself. They're two wonderful gentlemen that I've had the honor of coaching for the past 4 years. They were freshmen my first year as a coach, and now they're graduating. Every year I've gone to graduation to see the people I love more than anything walk across the stage and get their degrees. It's a ritual, a tradition. My question is this, Sugars. What do I choose? Should I attend my brother's wedding because of familial obligation, or the graduation because that's where I want to be? Only my parents know of the abuse, and they've already told me that I'm going to the wedding. I'm expected to be there. And yet, I'm seriously considering skipping it. What do I do? And if I opt not to go, what do I say to my family? Sincerely, in a pickle.
Parents don't tell 26-year-old adult children what they're going to do.
Except a lot of them do.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is...
they shouldn't.
Right. They shouldn't, but they do. The idea that only my parents know of the abuse and they've already told me that I'm going to the wedding, you know, it sounds to me like you really emotionally and psychologically would be faking it if you went to this wedding. And there's a part of me that wants to say, don't do it. Don't do it, not because it's so exciting to be at this graduation and to celebrate with these kids, because in the big picture scheme of things, there'll be lots of other graduations and lots of other kids who you coach and nurture in a way that, frankly, you should have been nurtured within your family system. And I don't want to dismiss the happiness that you might be choosing by going to that graduation, but the real issue in this letter in a pickle is kind of settling up with your family and deciding whether this is the occasion on which you want to say, I don't want to participate in the dysfunctional, unhappy-making family system that this family has been for me. And I'm not going to say you should do it or you shouldn't do it, but I think that's really the decision you're making. It's that big.
Yeah. In a pickle, the question I have for you is, would you go to your brother's wedding if it didn't conflict with this graduation party and this graduation that you want to attend? You know, would you go to your brother's wedding even if nothing conflicted with it, if there was nothing else that you wanted to do? And I think that, you know, what you've arrived at, fortunately, honestly, fortunately, though it doesn't feel so fortunate probably to you right now, is the moment in your life when you have to really confront what happened in your past, what happened in your family system, not just with your brother, but with the way that your parents really swept this abuse under the rug. And you need to face it with yourself and perhaps directly with your family. I really wonder about, you know, you talking to your brother now that you both are grown up. You say that you have separate lives, you have no relationship to speak of. I wonder about you having a conversation about what happened between the two of you, the abuse he put you through as a kid. I wonder if you've talked, you know, as an adult with your parents. Everything you tell us is about what you did as a kid, you know, how you were trying to defend yourself against this guy. And nobody protected you. And that's absolutely wrong. But now you're in a different place. And so, you know, again, like I'm going to echo Steve. My gut instinct, if you forced me to say, do this or that, I would say, it sounds to me like you don't want to go to your brother's wedding. But I think that the deeper thing, the more important question you need to answer is what you're going to do with that fact. Because not being present at your brother's wedding announces new information to your family about the way that you're going to live your life. And making a choice like this to not attend a brother's wedding is essentially saying, and I don't want, you know, that brother in my life anymore. I don't honor him anymore as my family. I think that's an utterly valid choice. I just think that there are a lot of consequences that come with that. And, you know, I think that this might be the moment that you rise to the occasion of those consequences.
Yeah, that is really a tough one because, you know, as you set it out very eloquently, Cheryl, there are real consequences to that. And you know, the question is out of obligation and duty and fear of the consequences, am I going to step back into that older, unhappier family? Wow. All right, let's hear our next letter. Dear Sugars, I'm getting married to the love of my life. I am so excited. He is awesome, and we're so looking forward to our life together. The biggest woe I have is not my fiancé, finances, or family. It is my friend, the one I would have called my best or closest friend a few months ago before I got engaged. Now the very sight or sound of this friend gives me anxiety. I feel my stomach knot and my chest tighten. I know that's a bad sign and an indicator that some boundary is being crossed. When I got engaged and shared the news with her, she was happy for me, but she also immediately told me that she was scared that I was not going to have time for her anymore and that my priorities were going to shift towards my fiancé. Duh. Soon after, I told her that we planned to have a small wedding ceremony in the Caribbean, where my fiancé is from. And since that will be costly for our guests, we're not doing a traditional bridal party, no groomsmen or bridesmaids. She threw a fit. She said my wedding choices were very exclusive to me and my fiancé. Duh. Next, when I told her that since we're doing the fun beach ceremony in the Caribbean, we will do our Catholic church ceremony here in our hometown, and we're only inviting our parents and siblings to that, no friends, she burst into tears and became slightly hysterical. Finally, and this is the final straw for me, she told me that her mom and sisters assumed they were invited to our wedding. She knows I'm having a very small wedding. I haven't even invited my entire family because it would be too many people. When I asked my friend what she expects me to do about this situation with her family, she told me to invite only 2 out of her 9 family members. This made me very uncomfortable because I knew that it wasn't the right thing to do, but I agreed to it against my better judgment. Turns out the rest of the family is now hurt that they aren't invited. Now, Sugars, I feel like I was expecting drama from my family or maybe even my fiancé's family because we really do have a group of crazies between us. But I'm hurt, angry, and frustrated that the drama seems to be coming from the one person I least expected it from, and I know she knows it. For example, she said, quote, "I'm sorry about throwing my family onto your guest list like that, but you know I can't say no to them. I should not have done that to you, but I'm glad you're accommodating them." Sugars, do you see why this is so frustrating? I want to be able to set a boundary without hurting my friendship. Thanks, not the bride, but the bestie Zilla.
Oh, dear bride.
Oh, dear, dear.
This is not somebody who's a friend to you right now. And I think that you need to set boundaries without fearing that it's going to hurt your friendship. Because here's the deal. If a reasonable boundary hurts a relationship, usually what that speaks to is that you're dealing with an unreasonable person. Okay? What you're doing is saying, we're going to have our wedding, a very small wedding in the Caribbean on the beach, and then we're going to have this parents and siblings wedding in the church, and this is what we want. And a good friend says, I'm so happy for you. I really want you to have the wedding that you want to have. And that's the end of the conversation. And really, I think that you've gone above and beyond to placate this woman and explain things, and you've done the wrong thing by being accommodating to her. You have really endured too much. And I would say that the boundary you need to set now is to either through your actions or your words or both, just put her in her place and say, I'm so sorry that you are in disagreement with the way that I've decided to have my wedding. And I can't help you with that because it's my wedding. And so if you can't cooperate, and that means, you know, you're invited to this and not that, and your family is not invited to this, but they are invited to that, or they're not invited to anything. If you can't comply with that, then we need to take a break with our friendship.
You know, the only amendation I would make to that, not the bride, but the bestie Zilla, is that I think what your friend is going through is that she fears she's going to lose you. I don't think that. I know it, and I think you know it too. And the irony is, as we know, Cheryl, with so many letter writers, when people are worried that they're going to lose somebody, they have a way of unconsciously pushing them away before that loss, right? Mm-hmm. And making it your fault. Get underneath that. Dig underneath that and say, you know, I think you're afraid that I'm not going to be there for you. I'll tell you this one little story just from our, like, disastrous elopement and what happened in the wake of that when, you know, Aaron's parents realized we hadn't invited them and we were married already and she was knocked up. And my father-in-law went into this kind of denial state where he was saying, I don't believe any of it. I want to see the marriage license. I don't believe any of it. This is all just a trick. And my mom, in the way that she has, she's so smart, she just dug right underneath that and she walked up to Bob and she sat down right next to him and she said, it's tough to see your little girl get married and move off into the world. And it wasn't like condescending. She was really saying underneath that, you're kind of having to suddenly say goodbye to your little girl. I think the best friend here is worried that she's going to lose you. And so she's pushing you away.
Yeah.
And it might be that she's going to successfully do it, but you should try to tell her, I want to have a friendship. And that means I support you in your pregnancy and you support me appropriately in my getting married.
It's interesting. I love the compassionate view that you've taken of this friend. You know, I agree with you that she's threatened and afraid she's going to lose her and all that stuff. I also think that your friend is a bully and a manipulator, you know, and she's very clearly trying to get you to do what she wants. And she thinks that she gets to call the shots in your life. I mean, it's interesting, that first letter where I'm saying, let's be a little more gentle
more
with the father.
Yeah.
Then you're like, no, he's a bully. But, you know, I think that that's the thing about boundaries is like, we can't say from this distance exactly where that line is set, exactly how gentle or firm you need to be. What we can say is usually when people are trying to manipulate us into doing what they want us to do, it is based in some desire to be loved. And yet we also know that some people, no matter how much love you give them, it's never enough. And then they become bullies. And you do need to say, guess what? Not
right.
Going to do it.
Right.
You're not invited.
In a certain way, sad daughter-in-law, you know, the prescription that I didn't give you, but it retrospectively, just listening to you talk, Cheryl, maybe sad daughter-in-law needs to, you know, drive over to the father-in-law's house and say, do you have a problem with me? Do you have a problem with your son marrying me? Because
right.
You're trying to hijack our wedding.
She should bring a baseball bat with her.
And brass knuckles and the whole thing. Like, maybe dress in the wedding outfit, but with the brass knuckles
and her
bat.
Bridesmaids.
I like
all
it.
Of them. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
I think we're being very helpful.
Last letter. Dear Sugars, I'm a 40-year-old single woman. I've never been married, though it's something I desire very much. A fellow older single girlfriend is getting married for the first time next month. I'm not attending the wedding because it's in the Caribbean, and I'm attending another wedding of a much closer friend the same day. The bride-to-be set up a honey fund in lieu of a gift registry. After the bride called to interrogate me about why I'm not attending her wedding, I contributed to the honey fund and got the following sneakily condescending thank you email from her. Thank you so much for the sweet gift. I used to hate giving wedding gifts when I was single. I thought it was the most infuriating thing because I always thought being single is so hard that it should be the other way around, as anyone should be getting a gift just for surviving being single. I will put that money towards my cat sitting and consider it a gift from one kitty lover to another to make sure my little sweetheart is taken care of. I have a woman coming to stay with her for the time we're gone, and although her price was much better than other sitters, it still isn't cheap. I'll also accept the gift with the idea that you will not be single much longer, and that the right person for you, who will appreciate your vivacious personality and all of your talents, is about to enter your life soon. I'm sure my friend sent this note from the right place in her heart, but her reply felt extremely condescending and hurtful. She knows I'm not happy about being single. Part of me wants to ignore her note, as the bride tends to be very emotional and dramatic, but part of me wants her to know how hurtful and inappropriate this felt. We're not super close, but we've known each other for a few years, and we've often lamented over our shared single lady status. What are your thoughts, Sugars? Signed, Single in Sacramento.
All right. Consciously, I think this woman is trying to wish you well, but unconsciously, it's really passive-aggressive. She's rubbing your nose in it. And I think you have every right to be frustrated, you know, and pissed off about it. But I also think, I'm not saying you should immediately get there, but it's sad that even unconsciously, this bride can't find a way to just say, thank you so much. You didn't have to be so kind and generous, and I appreciate it. There's something amiss here that she feels the need to write a note to you that is unconsciously anyway engineered to try to make you feel bad about yourself. There's some doubt within her she's trying to cast out and put on you, and that's frankly sad.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I read the email differently. I understand how it feels condescending to you, single in Sacramento. It made me bristle the first time I read it, too. And then when I read it again, I could see so clearly that this woman was trying so hard to not be like all the brides who came before her when it came to thanking her single friends for wedding gifts. Like, she's so identifying with what it felt like to be that single friend giving yet another wedding gift that she overcompensated.
Yeah,
and she said too much, you know. I mean, this is what I read into the email, that, you know, she was trying to say to you, listen, I know what it feels like to be you, single in Sacramento. And so I'm going to, like, actually acknowledge this feeling. At least my idea is, like, when she's saying, I'm going to, you know, pay for the cat sitter, what she's trying to say is, like, you know, it's going to go to something that we share, you know,
right,
like that we love our cats. It's not going to go towards, like, margaritas naked in bed with my lover on my honeymoon, my husband, you know. So, like, I actually think that this totally ham-fisted email is teeming with the desire to be kind and the desire to have empathy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say to you, single in Sacramento, to just maybe allow that interpretation to be a possible, you know, way to let this letter sit in your mind. Because we could do, like, a whole sort of, like, you know, literary analysis of word by word.
Yeah.
And we could come to different conclusions about it. But I think that the main conclusion that you should probably land on and try to hold in your heart is that thing that you said, I'm sure my friend sent this note from the right place in her heart.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I really discourage you from letting this be something you hold against her for the rest of her life.
Or just hold,
you
as
know,
a, yeah.
I mean, I know I have done this with friends where they have said or done something that I took in a way that I found insulting,
mm-hmm,
or offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it sort of festers and grows. And I've also been on the other side of that where I think,
right,
did I say something wrong and you didn't tell me what I said wrong? It's,
yeah,
so confusing.
Yeah.
You know? And,
yeah,
so I'm just going to say, I really am going to encourage you, single in Sacramento, to just say it came from the right place. What she meant to say is, I see you,
mm-hmm,
for who you are in this moment. And I acknowledge that it might be kind of awkward for you to be happy for me at this moment in my life.
I think that's a really great, generous interpretation of what she wrote. As you were reading, I say, okay, all right, yeah, All right. I think it's more complicated than that, but I also think you're right that there was a lot of her motive there that was trying to particularize the note and be considerate. I think the undercurrent that disturbs me both in the email and in your letter, Single in Sacramento, is, you know, what we talked about when we talked about spinsterdom and finding the one is this idea that singledom is, you know, this horrible state, this terrible purgatory, and, you know, women somehow have to apply and somehow figure a way to luck out or find the one and get married, and then everything will be peachy keen. And that is condescending, frankly, you know, as we talked about with Kate Bullock, that idea, you know, that you're either somebody's spouse or somebody's mother. There's no third path. But that's a larger thing for you to sit with and consider. Maybe part of what tilts your interpretation of this email in the direction that I received it and not as generously as Cheryl set out is this underlying feeling, I'm not happy being single. And she's putting her finger on that in a way that she doesn't mean it to hurt, but it's a bruise, so it does hurt.
Mm-hmm. Good luck, Single in Sacramento.
Yeah, absolutely.
And good luck to all of you who wrote us letters. We would love to hear what happened, how those things turned out, what your decisions were.
Yeah.
And if everyone behaved at those weddings, we've got all these people who might or might not go to weddings that yep. might go rather awry. Usually what happens at weddings is no matter how much goes wrong in the lead up to it, mm-hmm. once the day arrives, like I said, it's like a ball rolling down the hill. And it's usually quite a beautiful thing. And so many times the things that you think are going wrong end up being the best memories, the funniest things. You know, my wedding was outside. We didn't have a tent because it was August in the Pacific Northwest. And everyone says, it never rains in August in the Pacific Northwest. Well, right. Guess when it
Cue
rained.
The rain.
Guess when right. it rained. Yeah. August 7th, 1999 is when it rained. Mm. And we found a way through it. And it ended up being more beautiful than if the day had been wall-to-wall sunshine. And that's what I wish for all of you, that no matter what happens, that you're going to have that ray of light.
Right.
And none of you are wearing white dresses, are you? Dear Sugar Radio is produced by WBUR in Boston.
Yes, we are legally wed to them, it turns out.
Indeed. We're produced and edited by Lisa Tobin. We're recording today at Talkback Sound and Visual in Portland, Oregon. Our new theme music is by the Portland musicians known as Wonderly. Please listen and subscribe to us on iTunes and write to us at DearSugarRadio@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.